Hey Dolphins fans, you have a chance to win a one-of-a-kind piece of Miami Dolphins memorabilia. Enter a raffle to win a motorcycle signed by players and coaches from the 1972 Perfect Team. The custom-built Borgetz motorcycle features autographs, photos, and tributes honoring the only undefeated team in NFL history. From now until February 10th, which is Super Bowl Sunday, you can enter to win. Go to 1972perfectbike.givesmart.com.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here in the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt and the toughest podcaster Dan Marino ever played with, OJ McDuffie. Juice, how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling really good, Big Seth. You know, every time we get in here, you know, in a new set and get a great guest, man, I'm pumped up, man. And no. I'm definitely pumped because when you plan and you have somebody here that you play with, man, that makes it even more exciting, bro.
Even if he was on the wrong side of the ball. He loves to talk about the right side of the ball and the wrong side of the ball.
I know.
Brian Walker dives into the fish tank. B-Walk, first and foremost, welcome to the tank, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
And so, like, Brian spent his career trying to take the head off of guys like yourself, so you're still cool.
Yeah, definitely cool, man. As long as we're on the same team, it's one thing, man.
Right.
You know what I mean? B-Walks, but he was on my squad. Now, some dudes from other teams, I don't want anything to do with still to this day. You know what I mean?
You have been known to hold a grudge.
Forever.
Juice loves a good grudge. So if the name Brian Walker doesn't jump out at you, perhaps it should, especially if you think back to the 2000 season, right? Led the Dolphins with 7 interceptions in a secondary that also had names like Madison, Sertan, Marion, but it was this guy, it was Walker, who led the team in receptions. We're going to talk about all of that, but I want to go back even further than 2000. We're going to go all the way back to Colorado Springs, where he knows it's coming, where you grew up. And is it Widefield High?
I went to Widefield High.
Widefield Gladiators. High, the Gladiators. Yeah. The Gladiators.
Shout out to all my Gladiators out there. I got to give it to them.
I love that. Mm-hmm. But so one of those Gladiators, and I didn't know this. I don't know how I didn't know this, but it was another former Dolphins defensive back, Sean Sugar Hill. You went to high school with Sean Hill. How did I not know that?
I'm not sure. You know, they should have connected it, and you were in the media guy to help putting that together. And they never built that connection. We didn't say anything, but yeah.
Well, I guess you guys, I think his last year was right before you got here. So maybe I just, you know, that one slipped past me, but I thought that was pretty crazy. So of course I had to call Shug and say, hey man, tell me something about B-Walk. He's like, well, I was 2 years older than him, so I didn't really hang out with him. He was a sophomore and I was a senior. Yeah. But he said, well, first of all, he said you were a quarterback and a safety. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So he played both sides of the ball, right. Which I know you did
as
well.
Best athletes do those things, bro.
Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to. Now it's a little bit different. But, yeah, back more then, definitely. Yeah.
Well, speaking of athleticism, the word on the streets now from Sugar Hill is that he thought your best sport was actually on the hardwood. He said you were a big-time hooper. So tell us about – playing basketball at Widefield High.
A fun time. I mean, and you couldn't tell me I was not a basketball player. Football was something I just did to hang out with my buddies. But my brother, my uncle, they won state in high school. I just grew up in that culture. I was one of those kids watching TV, like working on my gooseneck, laying down. And I just love the game of hoop, and I still do, but I just can't play anymore. I snap my Achilles and everything, trying to do some things that I used to do when I was younger.
Right.
But basketball, I just loved the game of basketball. And it just got to a point where I knew I was kind of good, but then you seen really good at another level to where it's like, I'm going to go with football.
Yeah. Right.
You know, right. So
that's what it was. That, and I mean, so you're what, about 6'1"? And so what did you play? Were you a point? Were you a shooting guard? What was your position?
I played it all.
Okay.
Because I could jump higher than our center, even though I wasn't tall.
Okay,
but I
like
could
Magic
jump
Johnson,
higher than
all five positions.
So the jump ball, I was in the middle of the, you know, the circle. But it was just basically give me the ball. Wherever I went, give Brian the ball. I played it all.
Yeah.
So how did he not end up at your court?
I know. That's a great question. B, why weren't you at the court?
Well, I didn't really get the official invite.
Oh,
you want to back
let's just start there. You get the official, even though I probably was welcomed. But back in those days, I didn't have anything left. When we played or off day or they said, we're going to go Juice's house to hoop, I was done. Right. I already had two workouts, and yeah. I was like, I can't go over there and, you know, misrepresent myself.
Right.
I can go up there and hang out.
But. You didn't want to put anything bad on tape is what you're telling
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, all football players think they can hoop. We definitely all feel like we can hoop, man. And I know that having that talent out there, I can't believe B-Walk, one of the you know toughest dudes I know out there, Big Seth, was afraid of the competition out there, seems like to me.
Oh, wait.
I mean, that's what it seems like to me. All I'm hearing is excuses right now, B-Walk.
Yeah, right. All right, yeah. I was just tired. But okay. I did hear that they had some pretty competitive games over there.
Some serious games.
Yeah, some serious games.
So, yeah. I don't know if you would have played all five positions out there, though, when you started having – down in the paint, you started having JT and Mark Dixon.
You couldn't. I was going to stay out of
yeah,
there. Those guys.
Smart man.
Yeah,
smart
I'm not doing
man.
That.
No point going in there, man. And JT fouls JT fouls all the time, and then he gets mad when you call a foul on his ass. That's the truth, right?
He's one of those guys?
One of those guys.
Okay. Ball.
That's it. Yeah. All the time. And that's why I got rid of M1 in my career.
I'm not going to comment because I still need to stay employed.
Right, Seth? So. I got rid of M1 because people want to call M1, call their own foul, and they want the bucket, too. If you call your own foul, you're not getting bucket in my crib.
It's done at that point.
He has been known to kick a ball over to Kajana's side of the fence.
His soccer game was nice. JT's soccer game was nice. That's for sure, man.
He's very competitive.
Yes.
As we all know, yeah.
You know, B, if Colorado wasn't far enough north and west, you know, from us, you know, Florida folk, you end up traveling another 18 hours north and west to play your final two seasons of college ball at Washington State. Now, you may not know this, or the guy we met before, Travis Wingfield, he's also a Washington State grad. Oh, and man. I'm going to tell you what, Seth and I, all day, whenever we're doing anything, we hear Go Cougs all the time.
I mean,
ever since we've been working with Travis, clearly, you know, he loved his time there. But how did you end up at Washington State, and what was the experience there like for you?
Maybe I had to take a sip of water.
Yeah, I added it because it's a story that it's. I don't want to be long-winded with it, but I got to tell you
what
it is. Yeah,
we got time for it.
So a guy named Mike Zimmerman, I don't know if you remember him. He was a coach for the Cowboys, coach for Minnesota Vikings.
Yep.
He was the defensive back coach for Washington State. So when I had to rewind it because I went to a JUCO first, end up getting into a little situation up there where I had to sit a year off. So after my year off, I had to use it as a redshirt year. I thought my football career was over at that point, actually. So then Washington State was one of the first teams to call and say, hey, you know, you get your grades, you get one or two credits here and there, we'll bring you in. We want to play you. We want to offer you a scholarship. So Mike Zimmer comes to my house, and he's the only coach that actually came to my house and, you know, met my family and stuff like that. So that's how I ended up there. I was like, this guy's commitment to, you know, getting a guy who set a whole year off of football to actually come and recruit me and bring me up there and, you know, kind of put me in a position to where I can continue my athletic career. I said, I got to go there. So I had some other offers here and there, but it was just kind of like that commitment level. Now, when I got there, he had left and went to the Cowboys.
Oh, man. The old bait and switch.
Yeah, it was like he was gone. But I still, you know, that's how I ended up at Washington State as opposed to a couple other schools. And I had a really good experience up there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Ryan Leaf, was he there when you were there?
Yeah, he was there when I was there. Good dude, you know, strong arm, great teammate.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just – and it's well documented what went on with him in the league. I wish it would have went a little bit different for him because the type of guy he is and the talent that he is, his career deserved better on the field. He got it together, and now he's doing great things.
That's what I was
going to
say. I follow him now, man. He's amazing, man.
He's
a great follower. He really is a great follower.
A great story of comeback and knowing that the game of football is just a game at that point. You still have to live your life, and he's a perfect example of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you finish your career there. You're undrafted in 96. Don't worry, Juice.
Yeah, I was disappointed with that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was hurt with that.
Yeah.
What you had expectations of going when?
Oh, No later than like the fourth round.
Really?
That's what I was being told.
Right.
By whom?
My agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, my agent. And, you know, but once I ran my 40, and that's a whole nother story, too.
Let's go. Yeah.
Let's hear it.
I didn't, after our last game, we didn't do too well my senior year. And I didn't know about the process, about the pro days or anything like that. My agent was kind of telling me, he's like, hey, we're going to have some guys coming up to Washington State working you out. We're going to bring you back to Colorado, train you for your 40. Well, that was right after the season. So I went and, you know, I'm putting it down and I'm, you know, getting my starts and all that type of stuff. But I came back to college like a month later. Our pro day wasn't until like 2 or 3 months later. I knew nothing about a pro day. I knew nothing about all the teams coming at one time and doing it. So I think like the Giants and a couple other teams brought some representatives one day and we ran. I ran like a 4.43 and I'm like, oh, I'm good.
Yeah, what's wrong with
this? Yeah, I'm good to go. Right. So I stopped training. Right. I'm thinking I'm good.
So I stopped training.
It's booked. You know, right. I wasn't training like I was training before.
I'm not going to name the podcast Brian Walker, So I Stopped Training.
Dude. It's booked. It's in the book. B-Walk runs a da-da-da, you know. So time goes on. Next thing, my boy, his name is Chris Hayes. Shout out to my other Cougar, Chris Hayes. Pito, he ended up getting drafted to the Giants. And Green Bay won the Super Bowl and all that stuff, but. He calls me. He's like, B-Walk, where you at? And I'm sleeping. And he says, all the teams are here. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, it's pro day today.
Oh, man.
I've been asleep all day, you know. So I get, he's like, man, yeah, get over here. They're asking about you. I get to the gym, and now it's cold in Pullman, Washington. You just can't warm. It's not like South Florida. Right. It's cold. So I get there to the field house, and it is packed. I'm seeing everybody with stopwatches, the official teams, and I'm spooked. Now I'm like, oh, no. I ain't ran nothing in I don't know how long, you know. So now I got to get up. They're like, oh, you know, take your time, warm up. And, you know, you don't want to have everybody waiting because there was only three of us seniors that they were there to see.
Oh, man. Take your time.
So, yeah, right. They're like, take your time, warm up.
Two
so
guys I'm, just ran the
I'm
40.
Warming up. Right, I'm warming up, and I'm seeing Chris. He's sweated up. He's just, you know, he done been there like 3 hours before.
Lucky he called
So I ran my 40, and it didn't turn. I mean, I ran like a D-line 40 times. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I did. And so that's what officially got put out there.
Well, you're like, hey, somebody find that 4.4. Like, hey.
Where did it go? Yeah. So I was just, and that really hurt. That really hurt at that point because they were like, man, this guy's slow. It can't be, you know, what's going on with him or whatever. So I didn't get drafted. I thought maybe I still had a shot, but I'd seen guys that I thought I was better than going off the board. Of course. And what I realized is in those later rounds, I didn't know that at the time because I was kind of hurt, but those later rounds, you kind of want to be a free agent.
Correct.
Because now you get a chance to look at who they drafted. You get a chance of saying, oh, I know, you know, they are two guys at my position. Right. I want to go there. So after the draft, I felt like, you know, I was first rounder because they was blowing up my phone. We want to bring you in prior.
Getting recruited again.
And all that, yeah. You know, so that's how that happened.
So the team that won that recruiting process was Washington. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Juice, a couple guys that have Dolphins ties. Norv Turner was the head coach.
Oh, yeah.
Cam Cameron was actually on that staff.
Oh, yeah.
But not on he was on the wrong side of the ball from B-Walk standpoint. You make the team as an undrafted rookie free agent. You play in all 16 games. You start year two, and October rolls around, and they release you.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of out of work for a month or two, and then you get the call. I don't know, probably Bob Ackles who called you, but, you know, you come down to Jimmy Johnson's Miami Dolphins team, and it's got a real interesting mix of guys on defense, right? You've got vets like Timbo, Trace Armstrong, Danny Stubbs. The secondary is stacked. You got T-Buck at the safety position. Corey Harris and George Teague were there, right?
Yeah,
you know, Woody was still here. Well, actually, that was just Woody's second year. And then you got these young guys that are rising stars in Zach Thomas, JT, 2-9, Sam Madison. What was it like going from Washington – to end up here with that group of guys?
Starting from the airport, coming in from Washington, D.C., and, you know, the wintertime, and coming to South Florida, that was a shock. So as soon as I got off the plane, I was sweated out.
Yeah.
And I haven't even got my luggage.
Now you're warmed up. Now you're good.
Yeah. Now I'm warmed up.
Oh, you can run that 40 now.
I would have ran a 4.2 something of that day coming off there. But when I got there, it was such a shock to, first of all, the weather, getting in and seeing the guys. And I really didn't know of everybody. And I'm going to keep it real. I was like, yo, there's Dan. When I got into the locker room, that was my man. I was like, I see Dan Marino. Right. Yeah. You know, because this is my second year.
Yeah.
It's at the end of the year. And I had spent some time at home, but when I come and I see the locker and I've seen a couple guys, and I knew Zach was up and coming, JT, and all the guys that they had just in that locker room, and the culture was just so different.
And what
than where I was. Well, in Washington at that point, we had a lot of veterans, Brian Mitchell, Terry Allen. You didn't touch those guys in practice. It wasn't thud. It wasn't go up and butt them up. It wasn't that. The locker room was quiet. There was no music. When you get to Miami, the locker room
is loud.
You know it, B. It's thumping up
you
in there.
You know it.
It's thumping. Everybody, it felt like fresh air was breathing to my career at that point. Even Charlie, you know, getting equipment, you know, and at that point, I seen Charlie like a couple years ago, and I told him about when I very first came in, man, you kind of disrespected me.
Really? Yeah. Oh, man. I got to hear more about this.
I said, Charlie, when I came in, I had a little workout between me and another guy. They signed me. I was excited. Okay. So I go get my equipment, and it's Charlie back there. And if I didn't know Charlie at first. Charlie was swole. I thought
he still is. He's still here.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I see him every now and then. He's still here. And he has that deep voice. So I was like, hey, man, could I get the number 45? And he's like, no, get the number we give you. Be happy you got a number.
Okay, Charlie. Oh, happy you got a number.
So I'm looking. I'm like, I started 4 games in this league already. You know what I'm saying? You disrespectful right now. Turned around, got my little stuff, walked on. I'm like, it's like that. So it was just,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, it was just eye-opening to me. And then the funny thing about it, he gave me the number 31. So then they signed Brock. Next thing I see the number.
Right from
I see the number 45 that I asked for in my locker.
That is so funny. Normally it's the opposite, right? Like Brock comes in, I got to buy that number from him. Here's the number you wanted.
Nah, they just snatched it all. I didn't say nothing. I said, I'm glad to be here, And so it was just, once I got to practice with these guys and really seeing in the off season what these guys were about and like truly seeing talent and the passion that they had of bringing it every single day. Yeah. Corey Harris, when the workout was just such a leader. Teague was over there, and then T. Buck was over there. It was just being in the room. My defensive back, Mel Phillips. It just, even our third down coach, Bill. I mean, it was just, everything was just so much detailed, and you were accounted for. And when I got here, Westhoff told me, the special teams coach, everybody knows Westhoff. He told me, he's like, look, you're not a defensive back. You're a special teamer. And I took offense to that, too. And I'm like, wait a minute. I ain't never had to block for nobody. Like,
yeah. If you thought Charlie hurt your feelings, yeah. Mike Westhoff. Now.
I was just humble. I was just, humbled.
What's so funny, though, is he was so excited when he got off the plane.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's like down
palm
here.
Trees and,
music in the locker room. Hunking
me everywhere.
You know, it's like, damn.
Coach Johnson was like, look. I'll talk to you. As much as I talk to you, that's as much as I like you. And he wasn't saying 2 words to me ever. He wasn't saying.
Did he talk to you, Chris?
Rarely.
Oh, come on, man.
Rarely.
The first words he told me was like, we're in a special teams meeting. And he put that red dot on me. And he said, Walker, if I see this effort one more time, I'll run your ass out of here. That was the first words he said to me.
Westhoff or Jimmy?
Jimmy.
Oh.
Because they made me play the wing on the punt. I never blocked for anybody. And it was all new to me. If I blocked on somebody, it was because somebody got an interception.
Right.
It wasn't where I had to line up against a linebacker who outside rushed like a Derek Rogers or Anthony Harris, because that's who they had over there at that point. On the other side, it was Anthony Harris. You know, he's an intense dude. I didn't really know how to block,
I love that.
Ant, I got a story about Ant. His voice is deep. Yeah. So I really didn't know too much about him, but he was like, I got somebody new over here. I understood him, but it just kind of struck me when he talked. I'm like, I got blocked this dude.
Oh, B-Walk's killing me. At least he didn't challenge
you. You better tell him right now, Westhoff. You better tell him. You know, because you guys know how Ant is. I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't, you know. So he came across, took me all back to the punter, just kept driving me, trying to embarrass me.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, I wasn't used to that. And that was like a transition from coming to, you know, Washington over here. He was like literally trying to embarrass me in practice, which I was like, oh, okay, that's where we at with this thing. And so after him, he did it again. So I said, okay, I'm going to try my best this time. I wasn't ready. Try my best. Still, I couldn't, you know. And it's like 6'3". At that point, he was 250 pounds.
Right. Run.
And moving.
I'm barely 200 pounds. Yeah, right. Running 4'3".
Yeah.
I'm barely 200 pounds at the most and no blocking experience. So finally, Westhoff comes to me and Westhoff's like, look, you want to make this team? You better block him.
Did he tell you how? Like, did he coach you up? Or no, just get it done.
But what I did was I went in and I started watching the wing position on the other side. They had, like, Bracy Walker was over there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, how is he doing this? So I'm looking. I'm like, oh, okay, get low. Don't get too wide. And I'm studying. So the next practice, I'm like, I'm not going nowhere. I'm like, quite, boom, got my steps back. I'm like, oh, this works.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And I just casually just – progressively got better at the block because I seen that was the way to make the team that, you know, I had to do it. I had to block. So
interesting.
Well, I know teams.
Thanks Mike Westhoff.
There it is.
Same way I started off too, man, on teams. Seth always wants to give me crap about where I got drafted, but, you know, teams is the way I made my, you know, made my money my
returning. First year.
Yeah.
I'm going to bite my tongue, man.
Yeah, you better, Big Seth. Punt and kickoff returns.
First round pick.
Yeah. Yo, B-Wall, let's talk about some of the guys that – let's move on here, Big Seth. It's time to move on. You're still stuck on that first-round stuff, man. But
I was good until you started – you had your little smart-ass remark in there,
too. You know, but I did make
– Special teams.
Yeah, I did on teams, man. Westhoff is the reason I got drafted where I got. But anyhow, we digress there, Big Seth. Let's move forward. Can we do that?
I'm ready.
All right, you know So let's talk about some of the guys that Seth mentioned, because three out of the next 4 years, I mean, well, I say three out of four because you spent the 99 season in Seattle, but you become, you know, key member of that defense. And at one point, an argument could be made that you and Brock and Sam and Pat might have been the best secondary in the league at that point. What was it like playing with those guys? I mean, once you know, were you still doing teams at that time too? When you became part of that group, you still had the teams and that wing. And
I took so much pride in it.
Yeah,
and I was like, you're not taking me off
right.
This.
You know?
I'm not coming off this.
What
this
a transition.
Yeah, this is another opportunity to make a play instead of take a play off and get a breath to play the four downs. This is another opportunity for me to make something key. And in all actuality, the special teams really helped me in the defensive backfield, because when those guys, you know, those guys got picks all the time. I was coming through blocking, getting guys up off of them, knew how to, you know, do different things that I wouldn't have had before. I didn't learn before, but I learned those on special teams. But playing with those guys that you just mentioned, Sam, Pat, Brock, and I'm going to keep it all the way real with you. I was that fourth guy that they said, okay, who can we beat? Offensive coordinators. Who, when it came to game planning, I knew I was going to get game plan because I was the weakest link as far as talent as they seen it.
As they see it.
Which gave me more opportunity. Well, they didn't know about me. I study. I get up early and I'm leaving late. So I know you coming after me. Then I know some of the big plays that worked last week, you're going to try to work those on me. So I was recognizing the formations. And that's how I was able to Brock brought me in one day too. And he was like, you know, hey, B, one of the best guys I've ever played with. He's told me that. And that like pumped life into me, you know? And then when you see Pat and you see Sam in there, like all on the same page watching film, they're all talking together, all communicating. I just didn't want to let those guys down. You know, I just didn't. T-Buck was in there as well, mentoring some of the guys. You know, it just became a point of where everybody in the same room was on the same page. And when you move that way and it's unselfish in there and nobody's jealous of each other, nobody's worried about any money, this or that. And that's when we just had a unit that was just we all know some of the success of the defensive backfield and those guys. Of course, individual efforts were great, but the guys up front that we had, they didn't have no time to throw the ball.
Right.
So if you was anywhere close, you was going to make the play. And with those guys' skills, and I used to tell guys, like, just run to the ball. Just if with the corners that we had, Pat and Sam, just run to the ball over there. They're going to tip it. They're going to intercept it or something. You just run to the ball, you're going to make plays. So it was just it was really, it's an honor to play with those guys because all those guys are going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. You know they are. To just learn from them and be accepted at them and them know my weaknesses and try to cover up for me, you know, keeping me out of situation. That's a tribute to Mel as well, our defensive coordinator as well, even Dave. You know, keeping me out of situations that weren't good for me. And I was able to just really show my talents in other areas where I was strong at. And those guys understand that, and we still able to play as a unit. So that was really that was the best part of playing with those guys.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you say that, man, but I think DB Night Out might have been the best part of playing with those guys, man. You indulge in any DB Night Out, B-Walk?
Yeah, back in when I was first there in 98, I went out one time.
Yeah.
One time.
That's all it took.
That's impressive.
I went out one time, and I seen the culture of Miami and all this, and I was like, what in the world? You know, and I Especially was good with that. But I just couldn't, you know, if we go out and eat, and do something like that, I was fine with that.
Yeah.
But I just never had any wild nights. I just kind of stayed to myself because I needed every juice and everything, every piece of energy that I can get for the next day.
Right.
I was always on the bubble. You know, the kid, I was always that guy like, look, there's 53 guys here, you're 47. Mm-hmm. Or at least I felt like that once I got to a certain point. I was like, okay, I'm good, but you still have to make plays. But I always kept that mentality. I had to work harder than everybody else. You know, I didn't have that luxury of maybe a day or two off or, you know, or not really coming to work focused. Every day had to be what it was with me. Get there early, leave late, work hard, show yourself, show up. So I ain't had no time. I just didn't have no energy to do anything else, you know, other than that.
Makes sense.
Makes plenty of sense.
Focus on the right thing. Keep the main thing, right?
Is that what they say? The main thing was the main thing.
Yeah, for sure. So Juice mentioned it briefly, but you were here for part of 97, all of 98, and then right before the 99 season, you were released. You go to Seattle, and it just felt like, man, you were about to hit your stride as an NFL player, and things kind of went sideways in Seattle. I think you got hurt there, had limited playing time when you were back on the field. It is a little bit wild, too, that the Dolphins ended Seattle's season because that was, you know, the Dolphins went up there in the wild card round. We beat Seattle. They blew the Kingdome up like 3 days
right
after we left.
Yeah.
They knocked the building down. Yeah. And like a few weeks later, you were down here signing back again. Like, anyway, you wasted no time. Was this a situation where you just couldn't wait to get the heck out of there and get right back to Miami?
Yeah, well, yes, first of all, because it was raining every day. It was cold. I couldn't wait to get back to that.
You weren't familiar with that from your college days?
No.
2 years in Miami, and that was it. He knew. Yeah.
But when I went to Seattle, when I got cut after that training camp, I had a really good training camp. And I was like, I was going to compete for one of the starting safety spots.
Right.
I was competing for that. I had a good chance. We're in the preseason, and we were playing the San Diego Chargers. A guy named Robert Baker. What's up, Baker? Shake one,
mm-hmm.
was the wing on one side. So this was when the twos were going in, like the second quarter. So I had to go in on punt. So I look into Robert's eyes. Robert didn't really get the call of what the call was on the punt with Westhoff and everything. It was like punt left. He had to release the opposite way of the punt. He released the way of the punt. Mm-hmm. So when I hit my guy and went out to get in my lane, I just see somebody rolling. And it was big. So I tried to jump. He rolled up my leg and my meniscus, mm-hmm. tore my meniscus. So I didn't get to play. And I was hyped. We were just getting ready to go in on defense. So I got carted off the field and all that. And then what happened was after that, they said it was going to take about 2 or 3 weeks to heal. So I thought maybe I did enough to make the team. Last day, they come, hey, you know, you did a great job. They give you the whole departure. If we had 50 guys like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd have a better team and all this type of stuff. I had heard this stuff before.
However.
But anyway, yeah. So they let me go. And I thought, you know, okay, they're like, we're going to pick you up in about 2 or 3 weeks. So I said, okay, my knee heals. I'll get to, you know, be at home and all that type of stuff. Well, Seattle called, claimed me off waivers, went over there. And it was hard when I went over because I wasn't healed yet. So they had cut a guy named Lewis Riddick for me. So when I got in there. And so I didn't really know that at the time. He was a guy who was playing. He still had some years left. But their defensive backs were really, you know, he was really a good part of that team to where they felt the ways. We're going to cut Lewis and bring this guy in. He can't even play. Like, some guys were kind
of
boisterous.
Oh, you're saying right. Some of the teammates, because he was popular, got it.
Right. Yeah, some of the guys on Seattle. And so when I came in, it was kind of hard. I was like, they chose me. I didn't, you know.
Right.
So when my knee got better, it finally got better, you know, I was on a mission at that point. Like, look, I can play. I don't know what y'all thinking. Yeah, my knee was hurt, you know. So I actually started off the year doing really well and, you know, opening up some eyes. And we started winning that year a little bit. And I made a couple good plays, had a couple picks early on in the season. Ended up tearing my hamstring in three places. So that's what set me down. They didn't put me on IR. They're like, they're hoping I would come back. And, you know, they have all type of techniques that can maybe get you back. But once you tear your hamstring, you're done for the year, really. Yeah. So then the year went on. We played Miami, and I'm like, oh, in the playoffs. I was like, oh, my boy. So it was hard looking at. Yeah, I wish I would have played, but at the same time, I was glad for the Dolphins because I knew I had spent the whole training camp with those guys. So yeah, I was hoping those guys would, you know, just kind of win and go on. You know, I was kind of rooting for them.
You can say that now.
And they did.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So.
Right.
That's how that went in Seattle. So then, right after the year ended, I forgot who called me, but somebody representing from the Dolphins called me. It's like, hey, free agency, you got to, you know, do you want to come back here? And I'm like, yes, I'm here already, actually. So like, yeah, bring it in. Worked
right down the block.
Right.
And I jumped right in. It was like, I never really left. And so I was really glad to hear from the Dolphins at that point.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where I wanted to be.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like you never left, because that year we go right back to year 2000.
Oh, man.
That Seth talked about a little bit at the top of the show, and you start all 16 games, lead the team with 7 interceptions, you force 2 fumbles, register a couple sacks, you tie for second with tackles at 96, which is only a few behind Zach Thomas. We know he's a tackling machine, and just an absolute monster season for you. But, hell, I mean, it probably should have been a Pro Bowl season, right? And, of course, you know, I know a little bit about that, Big Seth.
You do.
But
you do.
We'll talk about that a little later. But tell us what went through your mind that year and how did it all come together? Because I know you all the stuff you went through, but then you get back here and you had this hell of a season right away in 2000.
Well, I appreciate that, really, because that was a year that was my best year, stat-wise, anyway. But what happened was when I set out for those 9 weeks, the last weeks in Seattle, I got a running start into the off season.
It's interesting.
And so everybody was done already, my body was healing up and I was, you know, I was prime. Boom, I was, you know, good to go. So it only took me further having the whole 3 months, 4 months before training camp. I was tuned up, ready to go, healthy. Everything was what it was with me, you know, that off season. You know, I like to work in the off season. And so going into that year, I still had, you know, I knew I had to earn my position. I know I had to get involved and get my feet wet and get the starting position. So I did everything I could, just coming, just working hard and, you know, just staying humble, showing up every day. So as the year progressed, I started making some plays. They started putting me in position. The team, what we had all around us, from the pass rush to the backups to everybody, the linebacking core, you know, everything, the pieces were in place, and great job by the coaching staff with that and the administration upstairs and all that for putting that defense together. The thing about that is what a lot of people don't know. I compete a lot, but I look a lot at the college players. That year, if you look at the University of Miami, who had Florida State had, who do they have down there? They had Ed Reed
and those guys. Yeah.
Sean Taylor.
Yeah.
So my thing was, I was always thinking, man, we are watching two Hall of Famers right now. We're watching some of the best safeties in the state of in the nation.
You're
right
in the
now,
NFL watching week. Those guys yeah. projecting well, their
you
career.
You had to do it.
Yeah.
Because Ed Reed was down there. Yeah. Blades was down there. Sean Taylor was down there. And I know the coaches are watching, like, next year we're gonna we gotta get something with this guy.
Right.
We gotta, you know, they're right in our backyard. That used to motivate me every week, you know. And some people are like, when they're in college. Yeah, they're
I've
in college,
never heard that before.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but I worked my butt because I was like, man, even if I put my best effort, I probably still don't got a shot. If they want these guys, they're going to get them because they were such great players. And, you know, their careers spoke for themselves.
Sure.
But being a defensive back at that point in the state of Florida, you have to look at the college guys down here at the UM, because I believe, you know, this is UM Florida has UM or Florida colleges has some of the best skilled players in the nation. It's just what it is. So when you talk about a position of safety, safety is like a premium position in Florida. So some of these guys that they have down there, even some of the guys they got now, they're, you know, number one picks.
Right.
Big, strong, fast guys. So that's what really pushed me a lot besides studying
that wild.
On that end. And then on the other end, when you have Zach and JT and you have Derek Rogers and Sam and Pat, I just didn't want to let those guys down. The guys on the offense, I didn't want to let those guys down. I wanted to come in and do my job and pull my weight. You know, not every week come in and be like, oh, no, I hope B-Walk plays. You know, we got this guy, he's going to do his job. And that leads back to what I was saying earlier is like I knew I was going to be game planned, but that gave me more opportunity. So I studied harder and I just was, you know, read the defense and I put it together with the coverage and put it together with the formations or different the likelihood of this happening. And it worked out.
Well, it more than worked out.
Yeah, no doubt.
It more than worked out. Whatever the motivation was, it worked out. I want to go back to what Juice just said, right? You know, it should have been a Pro Bowl season, and you do know something about that.
A little bit.
This guy led the league in receptions, didn't make the Pro Bowl that year. So he understands, he understands that sometimes the right guys make it, and sometimes maybe the right guys don't make it. That year, I don't even know if you remember, but the two starting safeties in the Pro Bowl for the AFC were Rod Woodson and Blaine Bishop.
Yeah.
Great players. Woodson's one of the best that ever played the position, you know, so there's no argument as to who they were as players. But that year, you had more tackles, more picks, more sacks, more forced fumbles, and the same amount of tackles for loss as Rod Woodson. Bishop had no picks, no forced fumbles. On top of that, a bunch of your teammates, you just said the guys you don't want to let down, JT, Trace, Izzo, Sam, Brock, I think Tim Ruddy, all of those guys make the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
You can make an argument that the defensive backfield should have been
– all of them.
Yeah, right? You know, it should because Sam made it, Brock made it, you should have been there as well. Was that a disappointment for you, or were you just listening to what your motivation was? Were you able to find solace in the fact that you gave it everything you had, you got the best out of yourself, it was your career season? Was that enough where it didn't matter what the world defined you as?
Exactly. I think you explained it. Exactly. You hit it on the head with that, because all I ever wanted to do was get the respect of my teammates in the locker room, and I had it. And it wasn't just because, and sometimes when you talk about the Pro Bowl, you know, sometimes some players that should have went, some people who shouldn't have been there that didn't get the nod at some point, but it becomes sometimes a popularity contest and your name has to be out there.
Yeah.
So I understood that Rod Woodson, Blaine Bishop, they didn't just have one great year. These are perennial guys, like five, six year runs. So I understood how it went. Even if they had one down there, they were still going to make it because their name was out there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve it. They were a hell of a play, hell of a players. But I just wanted to be in the locker room and being respected. And that year I wanted like unsung hero and things like that, which was fine with me because I knew from where I came from, an undrafted rookie free agent, to coming in and being a part of this defense, and actually having a little bit of individual success that helped the group have success, that was just fine with me. I was good with that. I was more than good with that.
Yeah.
You know, it was Pro Bowls, what it was. Everybody, it's nice to have, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, what your teammates, when you come into that locker room after a win or a loss and see the guys sweating and you know the work that you put in, that's what it's all about right there. So
yeah, no doubt about it, man. Still a little salty about my
stuff. Sorry to bring that up,
man. All up my feels right now. All up my feels right now.
I didn't mean to bring that up,
Juice. You know what I mean?
Just it was a parallel. It was a parallel.
Yeah. You know, B-Walk, when we get guys in the tank, we always do our research and try to get, you know, some funny stories from teammates to ask about. But it was tough with you, man. It really was. Nobody had any dirt on B-Walk. But we did find out that you were very well respected by your teammates, man. As a matter of fact, Trent Gamble said this: humble, hardworking. He was like an older brother that looked out for you. One of the best guys on the planet, and that's pretty high praise right there from Trent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about the respect you had in the locker room from all these guys, man? I mean, that just says a lot. Without saying a lot, it said a lot.
I really appreciate all the guys that I played with because they all touched me in different ways, either by a word or motivating or spotting or we working together, pushing me, something like that. But that's really what I was working for because I knew that's what was at stake for me. You know, I set my standards out there to say, okay, I don't, you know, I never wanted to be the weak link for the defense. And some games I was.
Well, we all have.
Some games.
We all have
Some games I was just that. And it just didn't feel good to me. And that just drove me further to say, you know what, these guys in here, they believe in me. We all believe in each other. And, you know, it was just fun. And we joked around a little bit. And you know, it was just, I was there for a lot, but people watched. I wasn't involved because I'm kind of sensitive, you know, so when it comes time to talking about people and joking a little bit, I mean, you know, I give you a little bit, but after that, it's kind of like, all right, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Like, leave me alone because I can't, you know, so I bow out gracefully.
Well, Seth, don't now, be the guy with a big spoon, little bowl, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you keep coming at me now, it's like it takes a different turn. Oh, so I stayed out of that area, but I'd laugh a little bit, right. You know, and it just didn't work good for me, you know, with those type of things.
I'm a little sensitive.
Yeah, I'm a little sensitive with that, you know. I don't have good snappy comebacks that, you know, a lot of these guys
Yeah, they
have.
Quick with it, right?
Yeah, they quick with it. So, I didn't have that.
Well, throw these hands. You want to keep going, I'm going to throw these hands.
It's like, well, then what's up there? You know? It's like,
you know, but you know me, man. I'm actively involved with our Miami Dolphins Alumni Association. I'm on the advisory board. But I would bet a lot of guys don't even realize that you still live down this way. You really are low key, man, right? So what is B-Walk up to these days?
Man, I didn't think that was gonna be the question.
I didn't think it was ever.
Sorry about that. Just getting over a little something.
That was the question.
You know, I'm a working guy, and that's what I go to work every day, and my job's kind of intense of what I do right now. So I like to stay low key, because I actually have to, in those regards. So
it's not like your Secret Service or something.
Yeah,
right? That's me.
You know, for the most part, I'm just laid back. I like to go to the beach. You know, I got my kids. I got some teenage daughters that are in acting and singing and doing commercials out in L.A. And I just like my time to myself. I'm okay with myself.
Yeah,
I'm okay with spending time with myself. Yeah, every now and then. Somebody may invite me out and I'll go, but I don't like to be away from home too long.
Right.
I'm ready 2 or 3 hours. I'm an older guy now. It gets about 11:30 and I'm like.
You say you're an older guy. It seems like that was the MO when you were 25 years old.
It was, but I could have stayed up.
Right.
But now it's like, you know, the music's too loud in the club.
It's not by choice now. It just necessity.
I'm just at a point now where I'd like to see people, you know, living their best lives. You know, I don't want to bother nobody. I don't like to be bothered too much. You know, if somebody's in the realm of doing things, I just wish you the best. It's great to see old teammates from time to time here and there, you know, and hear about and kind of catch up and doing those things like that. I just have been a loner for a long time and it works for me.
Yeah.
You know, I keep a very small circle.
Wise.
Well, I hope we press record over here because it looks like we may not get another opportunity here.
It's always love.
Like
always.
I have so say, he's going to disappear.
Juice, you guys bring it out of me, man. I'm like, this is the most I've talked in probably 20 years.
I don't know. Man.
I don't talk too much. But
I love it.
I just love seeing like old teammates that, you know, and good people that are still here after 20, 25 years and you sit and you could talk and, you know, there's no pressure about anything else. It's just, you know, it's just straight off the love of speaking with somebody and wishing them well. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
Man, we appreciate you.
We definitely appreciate it.
We're not done with you yet, though.
We're not done. We're almost done. Although I just love hearing that because it's really what this show is
all about, man.
You know, is that whole concept. So like any competitive game you ever played in, especially a close one, it comes down to a 2-minute drill. And there was a time period where no quarterback wanted to get up there for a 2-minute drill with all the pressure in the world and look across and see 2-9 and Pat and Brock and B-Walk. But Juice and I aren't scared. So we're going to try it. We're going to try and do it. Mike's putting 2 minutes up on the clock. We're going to hit you with some fun but quick questions. You come back the way. I know you said you're not witty, but let's see what you come back with, and then we'll get you out of here. Cool?
All right. Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right.
You Mike's got a timeout if you need it, B-Walk.
I get a time. Okay.
If you need a timeout. Yeah, if we're not aligned right or something.
All right. Here, question. You ready?
He stays ready.
Mike's always ready. Don't get ready. Stays ready. All right. When you arrived in Miami in 1997, the DB room also had Bracy Walker. You already mentioned that. Who was the real B-Walk, though?
Oh, me. Yeah. For sure.
I love it. What did they put on the back of the jersey? Yeah, right. B-R-A Walk? Right. I mean, so.
When I played for Detroit, they put our whole name back there, and I hated it.
Oh, I love it. Too funny. Okay. Was it tougher to play in Washington State? Go Cougs, Travis. Go Cougs. Was it tougher to play in Washington State or Washington, D.C.?
Washington State.
Okay. Weather? Talent?
Paycheck.
All right, there's your answer.
All right. We spoke earlier about a rumor that you were quick to cuss a coach out. You kind of dispelled that rumor a little bit. Of all the head coaches you played for, Norv Turner, Jimmy Johnson, Dave Wannstedt, Marty Morningwig, and Steve Mariucci, who was the one you absolutely would not cross?
Ooh, that's a good one. I probably wouldn't cross Jimmy Johnson.
That red dot. Yeah. He put that red dot
Jimmy
on
him. Jimmy Johnson didn't play that. Jimmy Johnson was just, you know how he was.
Yeah, exactly.
You ain't crossing Jimmy because you ain't coming back.
Right. So,
yeah. Probably a good decision. Okay, if this two-minute drill is going to end in an interception, not the way we want it, but I know it's the way you want it. If it's going to end in an interception and all those four guys we talked about are lined up, and I know you guys all fought for interceptions, who's going to make the play? Is it going to be you? Is it going to be Sam? Is it going to be Pat or Brock?
Hopefully all of us are back there fighting over it and somebody comes down with it.
Who's
and
gonna
the
be?
Other three get the block.
Ah, there right. it is. B-Walk's going to make that interception. That is your two-minute drill. He is Brian Walker. Man, it was so good to have you out here. That you came out to the surface and spent some time with
us. Yeah,
I appreciate it. You guys bringing me out like that.
I love it.
Sometimes you need to get out
and
talk. And it's, like I said, it was great just seeing you guys. And Seth, I mean, you like me.
Got older and grayer and balder.
You got the gray, you know what I'm saying? But, ever since I walked into the facility, man, you two guys have been, and a lot of guys, but specifically you two, you haven't changed. That's the great thing about it. Like, every since, I mean, even that brown little suit you used to wear every day.
The pinstripes were nice, man.
You know?
Giddy.
Ooh, like, the three-piece. Still Seth.
The three-piece. I can't fit into it anymore.
Oh, you can't? Okay. All right. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Man, thanks for diving in, B-Walk.
No problem.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Just like Drew said, thanks for diving into the fish tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using, and don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com.